Hello and welcome to Homestead Hens and Honey, a beekeeping, chicken keeping, and general homesteading podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, and today I'm doing a relaxed fit episode where I'm kind of going to give some updates about what's been going on here on the homestead and then dive into a little bit of what I'm calling bee chatter. So I was asked a question by one of my mentees and we had a really good discussion based on what she asked, and it made me wonder what other beekeepers might be thinking about this issue. So I will get into that in just a second. To start with, quick personal update. I am back, as you can see. I'm sorry that I took the 2 weeks. That was a week longer than I intended to be away. I am still having health issues, but I am making progress. I won't get into all of the gory details because it's gross, but I have a procedure coming up that will basically determine whether I will be having a hysterectomy within a couple of months or whether that's something that we can push back to next year and potentially even further back. So between this procedure I've got, I'm also trying out a new medication, and fingers crossed that either one is going to help. I don't really know what I want at this point. I'm not really looking forward to surgery because I find the whole process really scary, and I will be unable to do much of anything for at least 6 weeks. But at the same time, I can't keep going on like this. I keep getting really, really sick. So if the uterus has to go, it has to go. On the plus side, despite all these sick days I've been taking, my swimming's actually going really well. At the beginning of the year, regular listeners might remember that one of the things I set for myself this year was the goal of finally learning front crawl, which I know Americans often call freestyle. And it really started off poorly. I've always kind of felt that when I'm trying out front crawl that I'm just sort of flailing my arms and legs in the water and not really getting anywhere. A couple of months ago, it's like something just clicked. And I got the breathing rhythm down and the movements are coming more naturally. I don't feel like I am flailing desperately in the water. I actually feel like I'm making real progress on my form and my lung capacity. And I'm just really, really pleased. And I'm trying to push myself every day to do a little bit more, go a little further, do some extra laps. And I'm just pleased with how things are going. And it feels really good to be so close to achieving my goal. So that's great. I'm really happy about it. I am still kind of in baby season. I'm still selling my pink tongue skinks. I think I mentioned previously that I'd had two babies that appeared to have been harmed during shipping. And of those two babies, one of them, it turned out to be a very minor soft tissue injury, and that baby's completely recovered now and there's been no issues. The other baby, it turns out to have been nothing to do with an injury. I actually think this baby has a congenital issue that has started causing lumps to develop along its spinal cord. And this is so unlucky because the customer who has this skink is a complete and utter sweetheart. She's been so wonderful to converse with. She's so patient. She's really given everything she can to this baby. But this isn't what I want any customer to experience. And I really, really care about every single one of my baby skinks and adults. And I care about my customers. So I reached out to her last week. And I basically said, look, you can return the baby to me. I will pay for the shipping. You can send the baby back to me and I will take care of it. And I will send you a new baby free of charge, or I will refund you the price of the baby. And she took some time to think about it. And it was a hard decision for her. You know, she's really become attached to little Bumpy, as we've been calling him. But this is one of her first reptiles. And she feels that she might not be able to do, oh, for God's sakes. I'm sorry. Chappie just killed a squirrel. 1 second. Okay, false alarm. I'm going to leave it in though. I thought it was funny. It was just a really raggedy toy, but I really thought that it was a dead squirrel because that is my life. Anyway, getting back to the story, my customer was worried that if this baby has some kind of congenital issue, that moving forward, she might not have the expertise to handle the problem. So as much as she already loves little Bumpy, she's going to send him back. So I just sent her replacement baby, which she got today. She immediately commented on how even though this baby was actually born after Bumpy, it's like twice as big as him and eating straight away and very, very active. Bumpy has been active, but he has not been a great eater. I sent her a return label. She has everything she needs with the shipping box that she received the baby in. So Bumpy is coming back to me. He's going to be shipped Monday evening and he will be here on Tuesday. And I'm kind of weirdly looking forward to getting him back. I like projects and I'm feeling moderately confident that we can make him comfortable and give him a good quality of life here. And I know that I have just an incredible vet staff that I can rely on. Speaking of vets, actually, Titan, my male breeder who I recently retired, I've mentioned before that he had a hemipenal abscess and it seems to have left him incapable of breeding. And when I last had it looked at, because the initial treatment didn't seem to work, they had to sedate him and actually make a small incision, and they cleared out an abscess that was much bigger than we anticipated. And at the time, we decided to do bacterial cultures to make sure that the antibiotic that we were using would cover and treat whatever he had. Well, I took him in for a follow-up Tuesday, and we got the cultures back then, so it was really good timing. He had four different bacterias in that really nasty abscess, so that's bad news. The good news is that the antibiotic that we were using treats all four of those. The middling news is there was still some swelling because he had a sperm plug that had kind of got stuck in that area. And so my vet actually had to reopen the incision to remove the sperm plug. But while she was in there, she didn't see any signs of infection or pus. So to be on the safe side, he's got five additional injections of antibiotics ahead of him every 3 days. And I've got really good at using that tiny, tiny needle and injecting it into his little tiny stick leg by myself. So that's all good. And we're kind of hopeful that this will finally deal with the issue. But moving forward, I need to keep an eye out for swelling because he probably is going to have sperm plugs that could be getting stuck in future because the area now has this scar tissue. So I don't know, but he is retired. He's going to be a very loved, very pampered pet. The minute I get him past this whole mess, he's going to go into a fully planted enclosure where he can hide and burrow and just be a happy guy. So my vet has been incredible from day one. And I know that if this little Bumpy baby needs any assistance, that they will be there for that. Okay, so what else? Oh, okay, so I'm actually recording this the day before it releases because I have no time for anything anymore. And today, July 13th, is actually my 15th wedding anniversary. So sadly, my husband's actually away at a conference. Bless his heart, he did ask me before he agreed to go, and I said it was totally fine. We celebrated early last weekend by going to our favorite alpaca farm. They have a ton of really awesome animals there, not just alpacas. They have basically every farm animal you can think of. And on top of that, they have camels and kangaroos and wallabies and capybara. It's just really wonderful there. I love to go. And afterwards, we had brunch. So overall, it was this really lovely day. I won't get too sappy because I find emotions embarrassing, but I will say that every wedding anniversary, I feel so immeasurably blessed to still be in love with my husband after 15 years of marriage. I've known him since I was 18, 19, and we just had an instant connection, and he's just my everything. So if he ever listens to this, I love you and happy anniversary. I kind of pre-partied last night to celebrate with a drink, and I made a big old gluten-free pizza, and then I put on the original Alien movie because it's one of my absolute favorites. And I saw that Hulu has all of the Alien movies up. So tonight will be fancy gin drinks and then Aliens, the sequel, and then it will be Alien 3. I might skip Alien Resurrection because that was a bit of a pants movie, although I really do like the alien design in that one, so maybe I'll watch it just for that. Speaking of fancy gin, because July is both my birthday month and my wedding anniversary month, I went kind of crazy and I treated myself to a bottle of Hendrick's Gin limited edition release Flora Adora. And Hendrick's Gin is my favourite gin. I'm a big gin drinker, absolutely love it. And they do these limited releases that they call their Cabinet of Curiosities, and they just kind of, you know, mix up the flavour profile. And I had to get this one because it's all about flowers and pollinators. So from the website, they say, Hendrick's Flora Adora is buzzing with an enticing aroma of enchanting flowers and a fresh herbal character that is classically Hendrick's in style. The juniper and coriander backbone is lengthened by lush green and wonderfully sweet floral characteristics, creating a wonderfully balanced gin. Exquisite with tonic and a slice of cucumber, or perhaps try mix long in a wild garden cup, a medley of fresh mint, cooling cucumber, and juicy raspberries lengthened with a refreshing lemon soda. And I'm actually drinking one right now because it's been a day and I needed a drink, and it's very nice. It definitely has a very floral and herbal bite. In fact, I think the coriander in this is pretty strong, but it's very, very nice. It makes for a nice change. I will get the ingredients to make one of those wild garden cups very soon, but for now, it's just a gin and tonic. Okay, let's talk homestead news. Luna, my female whippet, saw the doggy dermatologist, so we'd been waiting for that appointment for a while. And long story short, we're doing a prescription diet for a while to completely rule out food allergies. Then we'll take her off her anti-itch medication and see if the rash comes back. If it doesn't, then we've proven that it was a food allergy and we'll keep her on the prescription food. If it does come back, then our options are to do skin testing, which is a whole big thing. It's you have to sedate your dog, because unlike people where you can scratch our arms and even if we find it upsetting, we'll deal with it. You can't scratch a dog over and over again with various allergens and expect them to handle it. So she'd need to be under anesthesia. The whole process is really expensive. And then afterwards they would make, you know, custom allergy shots or allergy drops that she'd need to take for a year. And I think it's something like the initial testing and the first vial of treatment is $1,500. And then each additional vial is like $300 and something. And it's not clear to me how many vials she'd need in a year. And it's also not a guarantee that the allergy shots will reduce the issue, particularly because she's older, and apparently sometimes that can make it harder to deal with. So right now I'm honestly leaning towards, if the food thing doesn't clear it up, just keeping her on the Apoquil, the anti-itch meds, because it's expensive, but it works really, really well for her. And, you know, touch wood, she is stable on the low dose that she's on now. And she's 8. You know, I don't know if I want to be putting her through any kind of anesthetic procedure if I don't need to. And it just feels like a lot of effort for potentially not a very big payoff. And since she's so comfortable right now, it just seems like a lot of stress. I think if she was, you know, her skin was a complete mess and we were like maxed out on the Apoquil and she was a miserable little baby, then I would do it all without even second guessing, you know, just throw my credit card at them and be like, you just put it all on the Amex and we'll pay it off later. But no, it's when we're very lucky that we do have a treatment that works. So fingers crossed, let's see what happens with the food. The food is really expensive. My eyes bugged out of my head when I saw it. On the plus side, apparently all the dogs love how it smells because I have to keep the bin locked and put something heavy on top of it because the whippets really want to eat it all the time. Kaylee, my greyhound, had kind of a rough, almost a week, kind of coming up to July 4th and then afterwards because of all the fucking fireworks. You know, if you like fireworks, fine, she says grumpily. I hate fireworks because I'm really jumpy and I can't sleep through them. And also because Kaylee is so afraid of them. And even on Trazodone, which is a sedative, and with a thunder shirt and with all the windows closed and, you know, a fan going full blast as kind of background noise, she's just terrified. And this year was pretty bad because we had a neighbor who would sort of set them off randomly during the day as well. So it wouldn't even be dark and they'd be like, you know, throwing around firecrackers and setting off fireworks for like 10 minutes. And then Kaylee would calm down because it would be like an hour with nothing. And then they'd set off like two fireworks, just two. And then that would freak her out again. And then they wouldn't do anything again until like 10 p.m. And then they'd set off like three fireworks and then nothing until midnight. And then they'd set off more and so on and so forth. And it went on until like two in the morning. And so obviously with the Trazodone and the stress, she then got all delicate about her food and we ended up with a full hunger strike. So I'm like mixing up ham baby food with warm water and syringing it into her mouth because people say if your dog doesn't eat something, just leave them be. They'll eat when they're hungry. That is not true of Kaylee. If you don't get food into her when she goes on one of these little anorexic sprees, you will end up in the emergency vet putting her on fluids and having them force feed her because we've been there. So I spent like a morning syringe feeding her ham baby food. That's the one thing that always gets her eating again. And thankfully we've been firework free since Sunday night. So she's now a much happier baby. Chappie is his usual self, as evidenced by the fact that I just ran off because I thought he killed a squirrel. He is being super clingy with me, though, even more than usual. So I think he knows that I'm sick, that something is going on with me. So he gets very indignant if I go out of his eyesight for any period of time. And the minute I sit down, he will like glue himself to my side. It's quite endearing. Until it isn't, because he also gets under feet a little bit. And so there's been some near misses where the whippets have almost killed Mama. And it's been a little, I love them dearly, but they can test my patience. My chickens are doing well with the free roaming. I still feel bad because we don't have the fencing up. But they have been really good about generally staying away from the property lines and just kind of hanging out around the back near the coop where there's a lot of shade and they can just hang out and graze and dig for things and, you know, just be happy chickens. We have one little adventurer, Raven. She's one of my oldest hens and I feel like the older hens are a little savvy. So they figure things out a little faster. You know, they have that life experience. She remembers when the previous rooster used to take her onto the neighbor's properties and dig out there. And so she's been venturing further afield and I've had to keep shooing her back, which, you know, it's not the end of the world. I try and keep an eye on them because I am nervous about not having the fencing up. But sometimes I don't keep enough of an eye on her and I should be paying more attention. So I was just kind of wandering the property line and I saw that we had wild blackberry bushes come up and by some miracle, there was still fruit on it. So I just started eating the ripe fruit. And as I turned away, because there was a lot that wasn't ready yet, I realized that Raven had been watching me. So as soon as I left that bush, she hurries over and starts hopping up and down, pulling all of the remaining berries off the bush. So no more blackberries for me, but it was pretty fun watching her pig out. The baby velociraptors are getting really, really big. I do think my favorite is a cockerel. You know, he's going to be a rooster. It's a boy, which might mean having to rehome him in the future. But I'm really hoping I can work something out there because he's just so cute. I just love him so much. And he's got this cute little comb and his chest is getting this really lovely kind of orangey red feathers just starting to come through. So otherwise they're all black. All three of them are black, but he has this kind of orange feathers coming through. And the chick that Dahlia had raised, I'm pretty sure she is from one of the ginger hens. And so she's only half Orpington, but she's got those big old feet. She, I'm pretty sure, is a hen. I thought for a while that she could be a he, but now I'm pretty convinced that no, she's a hen, and she's bonded with the three chicks that we raised inside, and they're a little flock now, and once they're big enough, I will be having them join the main flock, which will be very exciting. Speaking of chickens, that reminds me that for my anniversary, I received a walk-in chicken run, or like cage structure, from my in-laws. So I was really excited when that got dropped off. I haven't set it up yet. It looks like it's going to take me a while and I'm going to need my husband to help. But it's going to go sort of over and around the quarantine or the baby coop so that I can walk in and spend time with them and keep them tame. And also so they can kind of, you know, scratch in the dirt and have more areas to roam. And also I might be able to use that for geese in the future, so that's pretty exciting. If I do decide to get geese, I could set up, you know, their little house in there and they would be safe in the run. So we'll see what happens, but really excited. It's going to be a little project to get that set up. Part of the reason that I'm having a gin and tonic right now as I record is because I had a busy day, because it's my anniversary. I wanted to go out and have a swim. Then I went to the liquor store and picked up my fancy booze. You know, then I went to my favorite coffee place. I got like a coffee and I did some chores while I was out. So I came back a little later than usual. And one of the first things I do is go out to let the chickens out and make sure everyone's okay. And everyone isn't okay. So Petal, my white frizzle, who always seems to have something going on, has a prolapse. So the first thing I saw basically was there was blood in the coop and blood all over her tushy. So I start looking closer and it's a prolapse. And I don't know whether she prolapsed and pecked it and was causing the bleed, or if something ruptured during like her straining, because there is no egg in there. I found an egg that I'm pretty sure is hers. Thankfully she's an Easter egger, so it's easier to identify her eggs. But I don't know if something like a blood vessel burst or something, but it was a fair amount of blood. So I had to get the chicken hospital set up inside. You know, I ran back out with paper towels to, you know, push up against her vent. I brought her in, I got it cleaned up with a warm saline solution. And then I was able to kind of gently push most of it back inside, but it's kind of puffy. Honestly, I don't know how else to describe it. So I ended up applying honey to her vent area because I've heard that, firstly, it's antibacterial and antifungal, but also because of the high sugar content, it will prevent any like exposed flesh that could potentially dry up from drying up. And it will also help with reducing swelling and things like that. So I got her sorted with that. I thankfully have some pain medication still for chicken. So I pilled her and so she got a pain med. I tried to give her a honey and electrolyte. I was like, honey and salt? No, a honey and electrolyte solution. But she was just done with me at that point and really fought me, and I was worried about the stress level. So I let it go and she's in the chicken hospital now. I really think she could go either way at this point. I don't think she lost a dangerous amount of blood and she doesn't seem to be actively bleeding where I can see it. I don't know if there's an internal bleed, but she has that shocky look that chickens get when something is wrong, and she'll either recover and be okay, or she might just go downhill real fast. Right now, since I brought her in, she's been passing her feces normally, and that hasn't caused the prolapse to come back out, which is a good sign. But I don't know what's going to happen next time. Assuming she survives, what will happen next time she lays an egg? So we're going to have to keep our fingers crossed for her. I will keep her in the house on, you know, newspaper and paper towels until things resolve. And we'll see what happens. I don't really want to take her to the vet if the options are going to be surgery, because I've learned my lesson that just don't do surgeries on chickens. They almost never make it. And it's so expensive, and you end up just heartbroken with this massive bill at the end. So I'm going to see if she goes downhill, but she's hanging on, I might take her in to be euthanized. If things look like maybe just a suture or two could solve the problem, then maybe I'll at least take her in for that initial discussion. But I just know that if we go and I'm told like it's surgery or euthanasia, I'm going to put her down. I'm just not putting chickens through surgery anymore. It's just not something I will do. So fingers crossed that we won't get to that point. So with that happening, and I didn't get to eat lunch until after 2 o'clock, and I'm just totally done, and I definitely need this gin and tonic. So before I get into the full bee chatter that this episode is kind of about, I'll just say that I'm a bit behind with the hives, but the last time I was in there, they were building up really fast. I'm hoping if the weather holds, I'll get in there tomorrow and be able to take some honey frames and just do an inspection and make sure everything's, you know, moving through. The honey frames will hopefully be things that will be extractable, but I also am thinking ahead to winter and trying to decide what needs to be stored so that I can give it back to them. I really want this year to take honey frames off before we hit the dearth so that the bees don't go through their stores in advance of winter. I feel like this is an area that I haven't been great at in the past, and that I've left honey on for too long. They go into the dearth, they eat like a huge chunk of it, and then it's panic mode worrying about how they'll get through the winter. And I'll be honest, I haven't had a hive that didn't have enough to get through. It's been other issues that have, you know, like mites and stuff that have been the problem. But this is still something I'd feel a lot better about if I can take the honey off now, know that I have it, and then once we hit that dearth, I will just feed them heavy syrup to get them through. And as we're getting ready to close them back up for winter, then I will return the honey frames to them. Speaking of mites, I am due this month to do the oxalic acid vaporization using my new vaporizer, which I haven't used before. I'm really nervous about it for some reason. And I think it's just because, you know, you have to put the really big ventilator mask on, and you read all these horror stories of people who didn't wear the right kind of ventilator and got really sick. Or I somehow stumbled across something the other day where the vaporizer like exploded, and thankfully this guy was wearing a face shield, so the hot oxalic acid hit the face shield as opposed to his face. But that really scared me. And then I ended up down this rabbit hole of people using vaporizers and like setting their hives on fire. So I'm really, really nervous and kind of freaking out about it. But it's just that thing of, you know, it's unfamiliar, it's new, there's a lot of protective equipment I have to wear. But the only way I'm going to get more comfortable with it is to do it. So sometime this month, hopefully next week, actually, I will be taking that outside, putting the mask and respirator stuff on, putting on my goggles, suiting up, and doing a vaporization for all three colonies, and then waiting 6 to 10 days, doing another one, and then another 6 to 10 days, doing another treatment. So I will update on how that goes. Okay. All right, so that's all the updates, I think, I hope. And let's get to the bee chatter. So, one of my mentees, who I'm going to call Jay, she had a question yesterday, so she called me. And as we were talking it through, it really kind of got my brain churning, I guess you could say. And I was really thinking about it, and I was kind of thinking out loud on the phone call. And it made me sort of ponder afterwards. I kept going back to it, and I really started to wonder what other beekeepers have to say on this topic. So mainly, the question that I'm looking at, or that I was trying to answer, is can you have too many bees? And kind of related to that, can you have too much honey? So Jay lets me know that they have two colonies right now, and they are nervous about swarms because they actually got their colony through winter so successfully that it swarmed really fast. So she is very diligent about getting in there every 7 to 10 days, but somehow she missed the signs and they were gone. And to add insult to injury, they went like 35 foot up in one of her trees. So they just had to like look at them and just be like, okay, well, Godspeed and God bless, go find your house somewhere, because it was just too high for them to deal with. So they're nervous about swarming, and so they're keeping an eye on things that we always say, you know, keep an eye on. So are there queen cups? Is there enough space for the brood and for nectar? Because we're, you know, right in the honey flow, or right in the nectar flow, I should say. And they're also looking at population. So the population is really, really big. And good indications that a colony might swarm, as many of you already know, would be, you know, a big population, being in the middle of a good nectar flow, limited space within the hive. And obviously things like queen cups, swarm cups, and so on. So she just says, you know, we have a lot of bees and we're worried about it. We don't want them to swarm because these bees are, they really are enjoying them. They've had issues with aggressive bees before, and these bees are so pleasant to work with, and they're just really, really happy with the queen's laying pattern and everything. So when she reached out to me, her first thought was, you know, they were like, we could make nucleus colonies. And they were thinking they would sell the nucleus colonies. And I know that sounds like they're getting ahead of themselves a little bit, but knowing Jay and her partner in beekeeping, they're not thinking, yay, money. They're thinking, we love bees. Other people love bees. I have extra bees. I could give my extra bees to other people. That's what they're thinking. And so we discussed, you know, is this the right time of year to be making and selling nukes? And in my opinion, no. Yes, we're in the flow right now, but if they make a nuke, what are they doing about the queen? Because if they're going to let the nucleus colony raise their own queen, we're kind of past peak drone production at this point. And we are getting close to what could be, well, I never know if it's going to be early or not, but we're getting close to our dearth when it gets really hot and really dry and the nectar dries up and the bees can't find all of this wonderful nectar that they've been feasting and storing, and they get cranky, and that's just not a great time to be doing mating flights or trying to set up new colonies. And I worry as well about the drone numbers being lower and like what quality of drones are still hanging around, because remember when a drone bee mates with a queen and ejaculates, he dies right afterwards because it rips his guts out. So the drones that are left now, are they slow drones? Are they just not as genetically strong? Do they have worse eyesight? You know, what is it that means that those drones are around now and they haven't mated yet? So we talked a little bit about that. And another option, obviously, would be to buy a queen. But does anyone have any queens still? How long ago were they mated? How well were they mated? And are they already laying? You know, there's a lot of things to consider. So the other thing that she floated was, well, we could split them. So they could split the largest colony, buy a queen if they can find one, so they don't have to wait for the colony to raise its own. And then they'll have three colonies. But she wasn't sure if she wants three colonies. You know, they had one colony up until this year. Now they have two. They're really enjoying the two colonies, but she's concerned that three might be a little too many. And then she's also concerned about, will that colony have time to really become strong and bringing in enough food stores before things start to cool off? And although in Ohio, we're very fortunate that we have a full honey flow, there's no way to tell, as far as I know. Maybe there's people who've been doing this longer who could have some tips and tricks that they could share with me, but there's no really positive way to say, as far as I know, we're going to have a really good full flow. And because you can't count on that full flow, if you make an additional colony now, when we're getting kind of close to the time of year when nectar starts to dry up, will they be able to have enough to build up enough and have the kind of winter stores that they will need to get through? And I'm not sure. I kind of think no. So what kept going through my head when we were discussing this is, I'm wondering how many of you have heard this quote that often gets repeated. And I believe it's from the 17th century, and it's just considered like a beekeeper's piece of wisdom. I haven't been able to find that it was a specific named individual who came up with it, but it's the quote is, "A swarm in May is worth a load of hay. A swarm in June is worth a silver spoon, but a swarm in July is not worth a fly." And it's just, it's a pretty pithy. It's easy to remember, and it is pretty useful because it's kind of demonstrating times of year, generally speaking, when colony growth is assured. So May is a good time to start. In some parts of the US in particular, you guys are bombing ahead in May. We're a bit slower here. Winter likes to drag on. You know, June is peak sort of people buying their nukes. You know, the queens are laying, colonies building up super fast, nectar is flowing, everything's beautiful. We're all singing hallelujah. But July is a tricky time because we have some very hot and dry days followed by heavy rain, which is kind of a mixed bag because a heavy rainfall can help nectar be produced. But for 24 hours after there's been heavy rain, there's no nectar in a flower. So it's kind of like, eh, if you catch a swarm in July, is that really a strong colony and what can you do with it? So with those things in mind, I was thinking about that Queen Right colony, which is the big beekeeping business near me where I get my packages from and a lot of equipment. I say near me, it's actually quite a drive, but it's here in Ohio. And I said at the beginning of the year that I'm following their month-by-month guide this year. In terms of treatment schedules and things that they recommend, like supering underneath to expand the brood nest and stuff like that. So they mention what they call a junk colony. So they recommend, if you want to, basically setting up either a nucleus colony or a full-size colony that is your junk colony. And by this they mean your focus isn't on getting a really great queen in there, or having them raise a really amazing queen and building it up like you would another colony. Their focus for this junk colony is you put those bees to work. So you keep them happy and you keep them at home by supplying brood from your other colonies because the pheromones from the brood will keep them content without a queen. But you put them to work in the sense that you give them frames that don't have wax on and you have them build the wax. Particularly at that time in spring, sort of June period, where they're really bringing in the nectar and they're really pulling the wax. And then you have these beautiful, freshly waxed, built out combs that you can use in your other colonies. And another good thing about this would be, you know, So you can take those frames, or if you've moved brood in there and then suddenly you had a failing queen, you can take those brood frames back out, give it to the colony that needs it. And the plan is that you basically use what you can from that colony until you get into fall and early winter, at which point you let that colony basically die. So you don't continue giving them brood, you let them just sort of end up dispersing and going out into the world and engaging in colony drift, you know, finding other colonies to join or just dying because it's the end of their life expectancy. And I was like, well, that's a pretty good idea. It's a little late in the year for a junk colony because they're not as likely to be pulling wax like they would be when the nectar is flowing a lot more and it's not as hot and all that kind of stuff. But it did occur to me that depending on how you feel about pinching queens, you could do a split for this time of year and take, you know, half that population, let them raise a queen. And she might not be super well mated, but that doesn't really matter. Because if you did that, you could just keep that colony going until fall, then assess how they're doing. And if they're not going to make it because they don't have enough honey, or the queen isn't very well mated, then you can just pinch that queen. Or what I do is I take the queens and I freeze them because I can't bring myself to mush them. It's way too visceral and I'm just so in love with queen bees. Like, I can't bring myself to do it. So I freeze them. But you could basically, you'd kill her and then you would let the colony either, I don't want to say collapse, but like disperse, or you could then rejoin that colony to one of your other colonies to really bump them up going into winter. You could also potentially, if that queen somehow ends up being like an absolute bombshell, so she's just frame to frame brood, she's just incredible and you love her and they're the sweetest, most beautiful bees that you've ever seen in your life, if you have a queen that's not doing as great from another colony, well, maybe she goes into the freezer and you replace her with this additional queen. So that's another option. And that's kind of what I've done, not necessarily intentionally, but I've made nucleus colonies a little too late. And as we've come into fall, heading towards winter, I've realized that I need to make a decision. I need to merge colonies. I need to decide which queen I think is stronger and choose her and then pop the other one in the freezer. Now, this didn't really appeal to my mentee Jay, because Jay is very much like me. She's super in love with bees and she hates the idea of having to kill them, and she really hates the idea of having to kill a queen. So she's not really sure that her heart is ready for that level of practicality. So then I asked her, okay, well, what equipment do you have now? What is available to be used? Do you have additional frames and supers? Do the frames have wax on them? If some of them are not pulled out with comb, do you think, based on what you're seeing in your colonies, that they will pull some comb for you and they'll work on that still at this time of year? And the good news for Jay and her partner is that they have a ton of comb that's ready to go. They can put freshly pulled honeycomb into their hives. So I said, look, I know your concern is that the population is very big, you're worried about swarming, and it's a lot of work for you. They're going in more to stay ahead of, you know, the backfilling, the brood chamber getting congested, you know, them getting honey blocked, or, you know, thinking about swarming. So they're in there more often and they've been pulling a lot of frames and a lot of honey. Well, so I said to her, like, we're coming up to the end. Like, I know it's still July, but here in Ohio, we're going to hit the dearth soon. And if you can make it through the next few weeks of being in there more, pulling honey frames, even if you don't extract them, because she has frames with comb on it ready to go, she can just take the honey frames, put those into storage, and put in the frames with comb that the bees can instantly use. if she starts to run out, then yes, she'll need to be extracting that honey and then putting those extracted frames back in, which is both a good source of food for them because they clean up what's left, and then also will encourage them to bring more nectar in and use those honey frames again. And it was pretty funny because she's like, oh, we've got so much honey, we've pulled so much honey, and I'm sitting over here with no honey, like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds really bad. How terrible for you that you have all this wonderful, delicious honey. But I get it. Like, it is, it's hot, sweaty work. She has some mobility issues, and actually her partner does as well. So, you know, it's hard work, and it's asking a lot of them to be on a schedule where they have to be in there more frequently. But I really think if I was her, that's what I would do. I would be in there probably every like 5 days, taking the honey frames that I can, storing those that I don't have time to extract or that I want to make sure I have enough for winter. And then once I've hit that point of I've got X amount of frames stored, starting to extract, once the extraction is done, putting those frames right back into the colony. And she did call me today to send me a text to say that they do think they're going to go that route because they have the equipment, they have the frames, honey is delicious, and they can put a fair amount of it into storage if they need to give back in the winter. So fingers crossed that's going to work. And I've really been thinking about this on and off since we had our chat, and I wanted to talk about it today because I'm sort of wondering what other beekeepers think. I know that I kind of beekeep in a vacuum. I don't attend my local bee clubs. I am not on a lot of like active forums or websites where there's a huge amount of day-to-day discussion of hive management. So I did my classes, I did my reading, I still read things, I listen to podcasts on beekeeping, but most of the practical stuff that I do, I am basing it on either things that I've read or things that I've tried, but there's so much that I haven't experienced. And I am always open to the idea that other people will have different ways of management, and I'd really, really love to hear them. So because I had no time to work on like a really in-depth episode about like plants that I have in that are natives and pollinator friendly, or I have an upcoming episode which will be about thistles and how much they are driving me crazy and why they're so difficult to get rid of and all this kind of stuff, I thought this would be a good topic of discussion. So if any beekeepers out there listening, if you were approached with this kind of issue, what would you recommend? Is there something that I've missed? For people in Ohio, am I being too pessimistic about how quickly we're going to go into the dearth, or am I correct in planning ahead for that and recommending to take advantage of the flow now while you can before we hit that period where it's hot, it's dry, and there's not really much nectar for the bees? And that's what I have. So I hope you will leave me a message or a comment on Instagram if you've got some thoughts on this. You can send me an email. It's my email address is homesteadhensandhoney@gmail.com. But I always link to my Instagram, and that might be the easiest place to find me. Feel free to send me a message, you know, leave a comment, whichever. I'd love to hear your opinions on this and your personal experiences. I just want to know, what do you guys do? What do you think about this? What would be your recommendation? So I can't guarantee that I'm going to be back in a week. I want to be. I really want to do that episode on thistles. And then after that, my kind of more involved episode all about my plants and which ones are natives and which ones are pollinator friendly and when they bloom and why it's good that they bloom at that time of year and et cetera, et cetera. But because of being kind of sick on and off, and I'm still playing catch up because I've had so many days where I've just slept almost 24 hours, I can't guarantee that I'm going to be back every week. So episodes might be a little sporadic. I really appreciate your patience with me, and I'm going to try when I can record to have interesting topics to discuss with you. So hopefully I won't disappoint when I am here. And so that's it for this week. I hope you are happy and healthy and enjoying the summer weather. And for those of you who are in winter right now, I hope you are staying nice and cozy and snuggled up warm and safe inside. And until I am back, remember, hug your hens and then wash your hands. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate all of you, and I will be back as soon as I can. So take care. Bye-bye.